This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to step back in time with an iconic dancer or brace for a storm with a classic work from the Bard, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Mention the name Norma Miller, and the Lindy Hop comes to mind if you are of a certain age. Miller is still kicking it at 97 and will be in town this week as the Lula Elzey New Orleans Dance Theater, in association with the Louis Armstrong Jazz Camp, presents the Queen of Swing. Her assistant, Mickey Davidson, joins us by phone. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diane.
Norma Miller is known as the Queen of Swing, and it is also the title of her film that will be screening while she's in town. Let's talk about her incredible career. How did she get her start?
As a youngster, actually, she's about between 9 and 12. She won a contest, and a man named Herbert White saw her dancing and invited her to join a group of young people that he was organizing at the Savoy Ballroom. Herbert White was also known as Whitey, the bouncer at the Savoy Ballroom. And he saw the potential in children. He saw the potential in the dance they were doing. And so he organized them and provided opportunity.
This was an incredible opportunity when things were pretty tough at the time.
In the height of segregation. And it's also during the Harlem Renaissance. So at the same time that you have segregation and the things happening in America, you have this artistic insurgence up in Harlem, and Norma was part of that whole wave. She used to live behind the Savoy Ballroom, so as a child she could sit on the fire escape and listen to the music. So she grew up with that music, the swing music inside of her, so it's just a matter of time she got inside that door.
She's known for the Lindy Hop. Describe that dance for us.
The Lindy Hop is a partnering dance between two people. Most of the time it's man and woman, but it's basically a dance that deals with a follower and a leader that physically communicates with each other and the music of the swing period. Things like the big band period of Duke Ellington, Erskine Hawkins, Basie, people like that. So there's a basic rhythmic pattern. But inside of that, just like in the art of jazz, you have improvisation between these two people. And the objective is to effectively communicate with each other without speaking. It's a hand, visual, feeling, musical dance within the 2 or 3 minutes of a song.
And it's pretty energetic, an acrobatic style, would you say?
Well, the acrobatics, what they call air steps, that's when you're getting more into commercial or competition. The average person, because the Lindy Hop, in a sense, is a folk dance. It's a dance of the people. So the average person didn't jump up in the air, spin around, and flip. That's one of the things that made Norma special. She was incredibly good in air steps, and that created the excitement of the dance. It also made the dance commercial because it gave you that element of danger, excitement, and success.
Wow.
So that in the Savoy, there was a section, the northeast corner, and that's where people would compete. And basically, like you might see in Showtime and the Apollo, the people themselves decide who's the winner, not a panel. And Norma and Frankie and all the young dancers who were hot on the trail of dancers like Shorty George Snowden and the older people, they went into that northeast corner and challenged and won. And that's where each generation adds something to the next. So Frankie Manning saw George Snowden do an air step, but it was just like a flip over the back with his partner, Big B. And then Frankie took that and expanded it to really be a step. And then Norma took it And you could see her in movie clips like Day at the Races, where she's flipping and turning and spinning. And she has this incredible way of syncopating movements that makes it very musical and very jazz.
Now, how did the Lindy Hop get its name?
You might say the folk story or the oral tradition is that the man I mentioned before, Shorty George Snowden, he was in a competition downtown at Madison Square Garden. And he started in, within his improvisation doing these breakaway steps and, you know, being flamboyant because you want to win the contest. And somebody asked him, oh, what's the name of what you're doing? What are you doing? And right around that time, Charles Lindbergh had made his flight from New York to Paris. It was hot news, so George Snowden turned around and said, it's called the Lindy Hop, because he went into the air and hopped over the ocean.
Now, Norma Miller, she didn't create the Lindy Hop, or did she create the Lindy Hop?
She was part of the era of the Lindy Hop. The Lindy Hop, the movement, are an expansion out of the Charleston. The Charleston is like a 1-2-1-2-1. They took that 1-2, just like in the music, and turned it into that 4, and then swung around. So she was, you might say, not an inventor, but part of the innovation and the development of the Lindy Hop as it grew out of the Charleston. Frankie Manning is another person who's known as one of the innovators. He's also at many places credited with the actual first air step. They were the top-notch people who, in that northeast corner, could nobody touch. And Norma being 97, she's the last on call, you know. So that, once again, testifies to the strength and the healthiness of this dance that's kept her going.
Are you saying that she's the last survivor of the swing dancers known as Whitey's Lindy Hoppers?
Of the first tier, I see Whitey's Lindy Hoppers having three very distinct generations in style, the way they interpret music, and how they use the dance in their careers and life.
So she's the last survivor of the original group?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. When and how did you meet Norma Miller?
Norma and Frankie did a show at a club called The Village Gate in 1985. I heard about it, and I went down there. And, of course, this was the dance that I was looking for in the old-time dances. And I latched on, and I haven't disconnected since.
Norma Miller is known for dancing, of course, but she's also an actress. She's done comedy routines, a singer, choreographer. She's written several books. What role did all of that play in shaping her career?
I think that's the amazing part of Norma. She's won. The dance itself catapulted her into telling her story, be seen and being in the world of entertainment. She toured with the USO shows. So each thing added to another. I just found a lot of people of that era very expressive, very intelligent. When she met Red Fox, you know, that helped get her into the comedy and telling jokes. I would call her a consummate artist. Just as Tony Bennett sings and paints, Norma Miller can dance and write and act and choreograph and everything else, you know. It's just a natural part of her evolution as a person and as an artist.
Now, I know she no longer dances, but she still tours at 97, keeping the story of swing dancing alive for younger audiences. What will she do in addition to the film screening while in New Orleans?
We'll have a Q&A. You can get up close and personal with her, and she has exciting stories. After the Q&A, they'll be dancing. She'd be able to see the locals move and dance. Every geographical location has their own particular style of moving, how they relate to the music. So it's a way for her also meeting, seeing how the world is changing around her. And one of the things that makes her special is that she's always open for new things, innovative things. So her energy is one that is going to make sure when it's her time, she's leaving a lot of seeds planted to grow. Norma, last year, recorded her first CD with a big band in Italy, and she recorded four of the songs that she has written that got developed right there in New Orleans at the Louis Armstrong Jazz Camp in the vocal class with Jermaine Basil. So she's always using her time, her mind, for what it is she's about, dance and the music of jazz. That's my observation as to how she stays focused, alive, vibrant. She's also wise in knowing what she should do and what she shouldn't do.
She has an incredible spirit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've worked with Norma Miller for a long time. What words of wisdom do you cherish?
I look at somebody who's come up through a period where African Americans were not always respected. Some of the places that they performed in, they couldn't stay. So what I think about is how the people of that era did not let this society define their humanity. And that's what I walk with. I very much cherish their presence and the level of their humanity that could supersede racism, ignorance, that positiveness and the joy that this dance and the music of jazz brings has actually changed people in their attitude. When Frankie Manning passed, there were people from 24 different countries all assembled in New York to say farewell. That's the impact of this dance. That's what the kind of love that they have taught us to give by giving it themselves. So by being positive, clearly focused, and being a full human being is what I feel they've given to me to press on and to have the fullest life I can.
Mickey Davidson, assistant to legendary dancer Norma Miller. Thanks so much for talking with me and enjoy New Orleans.
Thank you. It feels like when we get down there, we're coming home.
You can meet the legendary dancer, Norma Miller. View her film, Queen of Swing, and dance at the Renaissance New Orleans Arts Hotel Art Gallery, 700 Chapatula Street, Sunday afternoon from 2 until 5:30. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane ends its 24th season with what is believed to be the last play Shakespeare wrote alone. The Bard's family-friendly play, The Tempest, opens this week. Joining me are actors Burton Tedesco and Lester Landon. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
As the title might suggest, this work opens in a storm. What's going on?
We are a ship of royals. We have come from Milan to Tunisia, where the current king is dropping off his daughter and giving her away to marriage, who happens to be my niece. And on our way back home from Africa, we get into a violent tropical storm that was actually created by the magical Prospero, the sorcerer of an island, who used to be a royal before the current king overthrew him. And we have a shipwreck and are drawn onto the shore of this magical island. And then the play happens.
I always look forward to seeing how you set these classic works, bringing them forward for modern audiences. What can we look forward to in this production?
I think that it's a nice combination of something familiar, something that feels period and Renaissance-like, but also with some very modern twist with things like the spirits and Ariel and Caliban and some of that costuming and effects and things like that. So it is relatively set as what we might think of as Shakespeare's period, but with modern twists.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to see with plays like this how directors and designers and actors are going to approach things like magic and fantasy, as opposed to the history plays that are much more traditionally done. You have a lot of creative freedom with these things. And Burton's character, Caliban, is quite the opportunity for creativity.
Who is Caliban?
Caliban is the island monster. His mother was a witch. Him and his mother end up on this island. She gives birth to him there. And he's never encountered another human, only his mother, until she passes away. And he's left alone on the island until Prospero ends up there with his daughter Miranda. And so then they become his family and they teach him how to speak and this sort of thing. So he's an interesting character, very primal, but also, I think, quite intelligent and learns fast.
And Lester, your character is Sebastian?
Yes. So I'm actually the current King of Naples' brother. I am his younger brother. Therefore, I have not been forced to live under the eye of the public and have a very, quote, royal existence. And I am devastated that we're marrying off my niece. In the shipwreck, we think that I've also lost my nephew. And I hold my brother, the King of Naples, accountable for these devastating losses. And I am convinced by my good friend Antonio that it might be a good idea, while we have the opportunity, to kill the king, my brother, so that I can take the throne. And he does talk me into it. And my character goes throughout the play deciding whether or not it's the right time to take somebody's life.
What are the themes that are being explored in this masterpiece?
A large one is family, and maybe going even further than that, the betrayal of family. That's a reoccurring theme. Prospero is betrayed by his brother, Sebastian, and his betrayal. Caliban feels betrayed by Prospero and Miranda, who are essentially his family.
And something that our director, Claire Moncrief, has mentioned a few times as important to her is how time comes into the role of all of our lives. And Shakespeare has set the play up to where we have elder actors and characters like Prospero, all the way down to the youngest lovers, Ferdinand and Miranda. So we really do get to evaluate how time affects each different stage of a person's life, how it makes them want to behave in relationship to others.
Yeah, and we were just having the conversation in the lobby about Prospero really sort of preparing for the end of his life. Piggybacking on that time theme, when time is running out, how do you ensure that the people you're going to leave behind will be taken care of?
Forgiveness plays a big role in this production.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Prospero was overthrown by the gentleman who's trying to convince me to kill my brother, Antonio. And one of the things that happens later in the play is complete forgiveness for that act, which is a pretty shocking turn at the end. As is typical with Shakespeare shows, there's a pretty tidy wrap-up of things, and forgiveness does happen easier than you might think.
Yeah, and I think that people in this particular play don't even realize they can be forgiven until it happens. I think that the people in the play have made their choices, and they live with them. And then forgiveness is sort of bestowed on them, which is, I think, quite beautiful. It's that sort of wonderful puzzle that Shakespeare gives us.
What will linger in the minds of audiences long after seeing this production?
Prospero's final speech, where he talks about himself. He asks the audience for forgiveness to go on. I think that's really most potent.
Yeah, I hope that people will walk away thinking about how maybe they could allow for forgiveness and letting go and freedom of people in their own lives.
Actors Lester Landon and Burton Tedesco, thanks so much.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane presents The Tempest, opening Friday in Tulane University's Lupin Theater. Performances run through July 23rd. On this Independence Day, I'd like to wish you and your family a safe and happy 4th. We'll close out with the Star-Spangled Banner, performed by John Batiste. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack. Thank you.